Hi, I'm Michael Sunoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business all from home from my two-car garage. When my first child was born, he was very sick, and it was then that I knew I had to have a business that I could operate from home. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online downloadable MP3 audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive. Hi, this is Michael Sunoff with Michael Sunoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. I've got another exciting interview for you, and it's related to the trade industry, or the barter industry. I've been involved with barter for over 10 years now, and I'm going to introduce to you an expert in how to use barter to help your business make more money, save more money, get more customers, and get more referrals. We're going to cover a lot in this interview with an expert. Art was a gentleman who signed me up into my very first barter organization almost 11 years ago. I was living down in Pacific Beach in a one-bedroom apartment. I learned about trade. Art came over and got me involved, and boy, am I glad he did. I reconnected with him almost 11 years later, and so what you're going to hear in the next 80 minutes is information about the trade industry. Art has been instrumental in getting over 3,000 businesses in the Southern California area involved in trade, and he knows what he's talking about. You're going to learn in this recording four reasons why you and every company should consider barter. You're going to learn if you have anything of value to trade. You're going to learn how to figure your bartering cost and how much money you can make transacting trade. You're going to learn about tens of thousands of items available for you on trade that you can spend your trade dollars on. You're going to learn the ins and outs of direct trading. We're going to talk about a few options for indirect trading. We're going to cover tax consequences, and we're going to talk about how to use trade dollars to market and advertise your business through barter. We'll also talk about a little known thing called script and how to use script within your business to get lots of new customers. We've got a lot to cover. This is the kind of interview you want to listen to three or four times, and I hope you enjoy. Let's get going. I've got a website where I do interviews with experts on all kinds of subjects, and I try to do interviews on things that I'm interested in that I know are valuable to my website visitors. So I figured, look, you've been out there selling barter services, and you've been doing it pretty successfully, I would assume, or you still wouldn't be in it.
Yeah.
And you know what the benefits and the features are that turn businesses on.
Right.
In my opinion, it's a hard concept to get your head wrapped around, especially for someone who's never heard of it. And I'm sure you've got a simplistic way of explaining it. And I thought it would be good for my people to learn more about it. So, Art, tell me, who are you and how did you get involved in all this trade? How did it all start? You've certainly been involved in the trade industry quite some time. Tell me about yourself.
In 1977, my wife and I moved down here from Los Angeles, and I was looking for employment, so I went to work for a heavy equipment operator for 14 years, and after 14 years, I got laid off, so I decided that I wasn't going to get laid off anymore, so I went into the sales business, and sales was always in my blood anyway, and I got into a printing company, and after a year, he would take us out on hot air balloon rides and all these great dinners, and I always asked him, well, how are you doing this? And he told me that he was with a company called BXI, and I go, well, that's neat. What's it about? He says, this is barter, and I didn't even hear the word barter, let alone know how to spell it. And then I wasn't too interested after that. And then he said, well, you know, you ought to get into this. You ought to start getting into the barter system. So I just looked at it a while longer. And then I had a networking group called Friends in Business, and I started accepting barter dollars as a way to capture more clients.
Now, this was your network group that you started?
My networking group, which the printing company helped me start. And it helped bring in new clients I'd never get. And so it made it look that much bigger. And then I started getting into more and more. Well, I can get my printing on trade, get my catering done on trade, I can get my movie tickets for promotions on trade, and I started getting into it more and more. And that's how I got into it. And then it just became a boon. It was just about that time, a couple of years after I got into it, that the printers sold the business, and I was looking for more work. So I started working for BXI in 1994, and I've been with BXI iTechs ever since.
What was your job with them?
Membership director.
And what does that mean?
That means it's my job to sign up what the members want. And what the members want could be any type client. It could be the massage therapist, it could be the restaurant, and it could be the auto mechanic. It could be anything. But in a barter system, you have to sign up what the members want. You can't just take a guess and think what they want. Because I did that in the beginning. I would sign up a restaurant, and I'd think, oh, I did the greatest thing for sliced bread, and nobody would go to it. Well, it was either too far away, or nobody liked that kind of food, or the hours weren't right, or nobody liked the owner. It could be all kinds of things. So you have to make sure that at least one member wants that kind of food, and you have to kind of have a sense about it. You have to know that pizza, everybody likes pizza, but not everybody's going to eat Hungarian food. So you have to kind of go into the mainstream sometimes and go after things that normally people will use. But I have signed up some wild stuff, and the wild stuff has worked, but I wouldn't normally go after a lot of things that you'd never even hear of in the main business community.
Right, so you're getting your wish list from your members, and you're working off that.
Exactly. The wish list is what you have to go after. And when you get the wish list, you get it from 10 different people, and usually 7 of them are the same thing. Everybody wants a roofer, everybody wants an electrician, they want dry cleaners, they want restaurants near their house. But you break it down, you call these individuals and ask them, okay, which restaurant do you want near your house? Because I've done that before. I've signed up restaurants near somebody's house. Oh, we don't like that restaurant. It doesn't really do me any good to sign them up. So I'll at least need one referral from somebody they want to eat at. If it's a Hungarian goulash restaurant, then I have to figure out, well, if I'm signing up just for this one member, and he's the only one going to eat there, and he only spends $800 a year, it's not really a good viable thing for the exchange, because we put a lot of work into promoting just one member to eat at one restaurant. We have to have people that have to have the same like. I'll call other people and say, hey, would you eat at this restaurant? And if I get a good positive response, and then I'll go and try to sign up that restaurant. But I'm not going to sign up just one restaurant for one guy. It has to be something that people would eat at normally all the time, or at least once or twice or three times a year.
Over the years, have you signed up hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of businesses?
I have signed up, I would say, probably 3,000 businesses in my tenure with the iTech BXI system.
Wow.
Actually, I started with TCE, which is a small barter exchange, in 1992, and then I moved to BXI, and then iTech bought BXI out last year.
When someone calls you and said, hey, Art, I heard about this barter thing. I'm a new business here in San Diego. What is this all about? What's your simple definition that you give them maybe over the phone before you come out and visit them for a more detailed look?
Well, the definition of organized barter is a currency between business owners. Business owners trade with each other to save each other money. And the reason why they use a barter system is they don't have to use a one-on-one trade with each other. So therefore, it becomes a currency between business owners. It looks exactly like a regular checking account. It spends like a regular checking account. You get a statement just like you would on the mail statements from the bank. You get mail statements or email statements from the barter organization, which is ITEX, the one I represent. ITEX means International Trade Exchange, and ITEX is the leader in organized barter. ITEX started in 1982, but in theory it started in 1960 because BXI started the organized retail barter system in 1960. From 1960 to 1981, it was one of the few, if not the only, barter system of any major substance in existence. In 1982, the TEFRA Act became law, making all barter systems legal currency. It's on your tax forms, and that's when the barter industry took off. And you can look it up online at barternews.com.
Okay, well, you say trade. Let's say I'm a bookstore. I just opened up in downtown San Diego. I've got employees. I'm a bookstore. You say trade. What do you mean by trade? I don't understand.
Well, when we say trade, it's just another form of currency, meaning that you use a checkbook. When you use a checkbook, instead of me paying you with hard U.S. dollars, I'm paying you with a currency that's between business owners, meaning that whatever excess inventory they have becomes an excess inventory in a hard currency that you can turn around and spend with other business owners. For instance, you have 800 movie theater seats. Only 600 of them are being used on a normal basis. That means you have 200 left every day that go unused. That is unused capacity. And so that becomes part of the barter system, and business owners use these trade dollars within this system to purchase those unused seats. Now, since it's not a one-on-one trade, it becomes a trade bank. So in theory, it's actually a currency between business owners.
First of all, give me an example of a one-on-one trade that a business could relate to or a person could relate to, and then give me a difference between a trade with a trade bank.
A one-on-one trade is when I say I'm an ice cream shop and I say I'll give you 10 gallons of ice cream equal to a set of tires. So say 10 gallons of ice cream is equal $400, let's just say, or 20 gallons. 20 gallons of ice cream would be $400. That would be equal to a set of retail premium tires. That would be a one-on-one trade. I'd get 20 gallons of ice cream, you get the set of tires, and that would be a one-on-one trade.
Are there some advantages to one-on-one trades?
Well, the advantages to one-on-one trades are really to one buyer or the other. One guy's getting a better deal than the other. It's not really an advantage too much because the one guy who sells the tires knows what his tires cost him, and the one guy who sells the ice cream knows what his ice cream cost him. So in theory, some guy's getting a better deal than the other.
But if both are doing the deal, maybe one's getting a better deal than the other, but isn't it a win-win for both?
It's a win-win for both, or they're both happy with making that kind of a trade.
Well, how far back does a one-on-one trade go?
It goes back to the beginning of time. This is when the Phoenicians started the barter industry. They would trade their pigs for a bushel of wheat. That would be considered a one-on-one trade, a barter system. The Phoenicians actually invented money in those terms.
How long ago is that, do you know?
I would say 3,000-4,000 years ago when the invention of money came into existence. I'm not really sure, but all I know is that barter has been around since the beginning of time. Somebody had to trade something to get something else.
Okay, so that's a one-on-one trade, trading this for that with one other party. What are some disadvantages of a one-on-one trade?
Well, like I said before, it's not always what you want. I don't always want your tires for porcelain dolls or porcelain dolls for hotel stays. So there's a lot of disadvantages to one-on-one trades because you might not have the commodity the other person wants. Service-based industries are pretty easy to trade. Chiropractors are service-based. Lawyers are service-based industries. A lot of other industries are mostly service-based industries. When I say service-based, there's very little product in the actual business. For instance, a painting contractor, his product is mostly labor. He takes a 10-gallon paint can, and he has to charge 5, 6, 7 times the value of that paint can in labor in order to make a living. He just doesn't turn around, buy paint at $10 a gallon, and turns around and takes the same $10 a gallon back. He has to mark it up because he's in the service-based industries. He's painting a house. So a house, in theory, if it costs $3,000 in paint, the paint, in theory, could cost maybe $400 or $500. So he's actually in the labor business as opposed to the paint business.
Okay, we're talking about the disadvantages of the one-on-one trade.
Right. Well, the disadvantages of the one-on-one trade are many. There's not enough things to trade for that people need in bulk. People don't need 10 cases of beer for 10 sets of tires. They don't need 10 bags of fertilizer for 10 cases of car wax. But in a barter system, it's a currency between businesses, so you can buy for as little as a dollar and turn around and save your other trade dollars for other things that you need.
All right, so why don't you give me an example, a trade bank. Give me the example of DXI, or which is now ITEX, and describe what it is and how many members are involved and why the trade bank offers a business an advantage with more choices. So describe it for someone who has no idea or has never heard of it.
Well, somebody who's never heard of organized barter would look at this a little foreigner. First of all, it's a different concept, a paradigm shift in the way you have to think. In easy terms, it's just another form of currency. For instance, if you said you would accept pesos in this country, well, anybody can accept any kind of foreign currency they want. The problem is, where are you going to spend it? So this is kind of the same thing. Well, you can accept ITEX trade dollars, but now you have 22,000 members you could spend it with, and that's the difference. As the pool of members grows and grows and grows, you have more things to spend it with. Now, there are 22,000 members. However, some members have more than one thing. So now it becomes more than 22,000 products and services. It could be as much as 100,000 products and services a day because one guy owns a restaurant, but he also has 3 timeshares he's willing to trade out, and he owns 2 restaurants that he's willing to trade out. So there could be more and more things in the pie from one member as opposed to just one thing. So it's not just 22,000 members. It's, well, what else do you have? So one member could bring as many as 100 different things to the pot. So that's kind of the way it works. And once you get into a barter system, you'll figure out that those excess inventories that are sitting in your garage become an asset. So if you rent out your jet ski to one of the members for $300 a day, and it was just sitting there doing nothing, that's newfound money. So after a while, people figure it out. It's not just about their business. It's about anything.
What are some reasons why anyone listening and any company should consider bartering?
First thing, the reason why you want to do it is you want new business. Everybody wants new business, and they don't want existing business that's already paying them cash. So basically, it drives new business to your door. The second thing is it conserves cash. So every time you use a trade dollar as opposed to a cash dollar, you're saving your other checkbook. So you don't have to use your cash checkbook to go out to dinner or go to the dry cleaner or go get your car fixed. Now you use your trade checkbook. It also protects you from business recessions because a lot of people don't have a lot of cash in their pockets all the time, so they use their trade dollars because now they can go out to the movies and they can go out to the dry cleaner and they can go to the sporting event. They can get with a trade dollar that they normally wouldn't have. So it helps fight recession, and unused capacity is a tradable asset. So everything that's unused in America today is being lost every day. The movie theater has empty seats. The hotel has empty rooms. The restaurant has empty tables. The printers' presses are down. So everybody's kind of moving excess inventory. When you're moving excess inventory without using a U.S. cash dollar, you're actually saving yourself cash. Now you're using another form of currency, and that's why you want to use it. Now, there's also a way to take your trade dollars and move it back into cash, because a lot of members will buy things on trade dollars and turn around and sell them for U.S. dollars. For instance, they might buy a grandfather's clock and then get it at the antique store that's an ITEX member, and they bought it for $500 in trade, and they could put the same grandfather's clock in the newspaper and turn around and sell it for $1,000 if they wanted to, whatever the market will bear. So there's a price for everything, and there's plenty of room to maneuver when you're using a trade dollar. Because when you're using a trade dollar, you want to turn it back into cash. Basically, a barter system is about leverage. It's not about trading. Actually, in theory, you could trade with anybody one-on-one. You don't really need ITEX for that. This is about leveraging. Turn around and taking your trade dollars for what you normally spend cash on and using those trade dollars for things. You just want to use your trade dollars as much as possible. Now, oftentimes, you can't get everything you want. You can't get those first-class airline tickets to go to Europe, and you can't get that Rolls Royce that's brand new off the showroom because it's not everything, and that's something that you're going to have to live with. And if you're part of the barter system, it's just excess, and sometimes there's some great things there, and sometimes there isn't. You can get some great deals on furniture, 100% trade, and sometimes you just can't get what you want. It's kind of like the old Rolling Stones song, you can't always get what you want, you get what you need. Well, the same thing applies here in barter. You have to kind of settle sometimes for what's only available. If you wanted a first-class airline ticket on Northwest Airlines and it's not there, you'd probably have to settle for the first-class airline ticket on American Airlines that goes to a different location. It might not suit you for that particular time. It'll suit somebody else, but it won't suit yourself. So I would say in the rule of currencies, it's the 80-20 rule. 80% of the time, cash works really well, and 20% of the time, barter works really well. And if you're in that mode of thinking, then you'll have a better understanding of how it works. It just doesn't work all the time. You can't get everything.
All right, you mentioned service businesses do pretty well. So if I'm listening to this, and there's all kinds of businesses out there, from your experience, what businesses do you find succeed in barter or excel in barter that are more predispositioned to lend itself to barter compared to what kind of businesses should really think hard before they consider it because of the nature of the business they're in?
Well, let's see. The number one commodity in barter today, in my opinion, is advertising. Advertising being a necessary evil. People don't like to spend money on advertising. They say it doesn't work because they don't have a budget for it. But if you use a trade dollar, it doesn't hurt as much. Advertising is definitely necessary in any business arena, but you have to use your advertising budget very carefully so it doesn't put you out of business. So if you used $200 and ITEX trade dollars to advertise as opposed to $200 in cash, if it didn't work in cash, you probably don't feel so good. If it doesn't work in trade, it doesn't hurt so bad because you know what your product and service costs. And so it's actually you're buying a major discount. So if I took $100 of my ITEX trade dollars and advertised with one of the magazines that took ITEX, and I was a restaurant owner, in theory, that $100 that I spent really cost me about $25 because that's what the cost of food is. So in theory, I bought at $25. It didn't work. I'd rather use $25 than $200. So basically, you're buying at major discount because I know what it costs and he knows what his thing costs, so everybody's happy. But I'd much rather use a trade dollar than a cash dollar. The second most popular thing in barter is printing or restaurants. it could be a tie for both ones, but let's just say restaurants is number two. Everybody likes to eat out. Everybody uses food as a necessary commodity to live. Everybody would rather use their trade dollars for food rather than use their cash dollars. So when they use their trade dollars for food, that saves a lot of money. So usually people like to eat out a lot in the business world, in the business community. So when you can go to a restaurant and use your trade dollars, you're saving yourself money. Now you're not going to be able to go to every restaurant. You'll have to patronize the members that are in the system, but those members are patronizing you too. So they're all going out of their way to do business with each other, and it becomes funny money currency between businesses. And once you get used to it, you'll think only of barter dollars to spend on your food or on your printing or on your advertising or on your dry cleaning or whatever. You usually spend your cash dollars, you use your trade dollars first.
All right, so these are good examples of if I become a member of a trade exchange, most popular things that people are looking for, food, printing, advertising, travel.
Resorts, car repairs, dentists, furniture, just about everything you could think of you can get in organized barter except gasoline. Gasoline is a very low profit margin industry, and it's hard to trade gasoline.
All right, so that brings me to the point. Anyone who's a dentist or in the advertising business, these are good businesses to sign up with trade because there's a high demand for these items, and you can predictively earn a lot of trade dollars. But what businesses are going to have a hard time or a struggle earning trade dollars from the members? Which ones would you advise not to get involved?
The industries that are hard to trade are insurance companies. Insurance companies actually are corporate entities. So corporate entities are very hard to put a finger on because you're not just dealing with corporate, you're dealing with the individual agent. Now, some individual agents have joint barter systems, but they're actually premium they're taking in trade and turnarounds and buying the services from corporate. So in order to capture a new client, that works sometimes, but you can't do it all the time because you might say, okay, I'll take the first 2 years of your life insurance premium and trade, and I'll turn around, take the premium and pay it in cash. I still get a commodity I could spend, but in theory, I'm not taking cash. So there could be a limit on the duration of the trade dollars you're taking. So if you take the first 2 years of the premium in trade and hoping they will stick with the program, then you're capturing a new client. That's if they stick with the program. In my case, I did buy lifetime insurance policy, and the first 2 years I paid with my iTex trade dollars, or BXI at the time, and then after the first 2 years, it's my option whether I wanted to continue it for cash, and I stuck with it. So it was the savings for me from the standpoint I got my first 2 years of the premium on trade, and the insurance agent was taking a gamble. Hopefully, I would stick with it, and I did. So that'll help. But you have to have an insurance agent with an open mind on that. You really have to have a pretty aggressive insurance agent to actually do those things. There's not too many insurance agents who grasp that idea.
All right, that's insurance. What other businesses don't lend itself well to barter?
Well, the gasoline industry, for one. Gasoline stations have zero profit margin. That's why they sell hot dogs and hamburgers to make ends meet. Taxes are so high in gasoline that the profit margin isn't there. I would say it's 10% at the best.
So is that why service businesses are good? Because their profit margins are enormous compared to someone selling a commodity product with a low profit margin?
Right. There's high profit margin industries. You can imagine what a box of popcorn, if it's $5 inside the movies, how much it really costs. It really costs probably 25 cents, maybe 30 cents. But that's what the market will bear. The market knows that a box of $5 popcorn inside a movie theater is the normal fair trade price. You might pay $6, you might pay $7, but you're not going to pay much more than that. So I'd say the fair trade price in a movie theater for a box of large popcorn is between $4 and $8.
What if I'm a computer store and I'm selling computers and monitors and I work off of a 7% margin? And let's say I don't have really any excess inventory.
That's probably not a good deal unless you want to capture a certain client and use it as a loss leader. For instance, you offer computers at 100% trade. Okay, well, that's good. Well, you might have to put a limit on it. You say, I'm only going to offer 15 computers a year 100% trade, and my profit margin is 7%, hoping that people, when they walk into your computer store, will buy something else, and they'll pay cash. And so that could be another marketing technique. For instance, some hotels in barter will take it 100% trade, but the restaurants on the same premises will not. They're different entities, and they don't take trade, but you got to eat someplace. so chances are pretty good you're going to eat on that same property. So there could be a lot of backdoor advantages to organized barter. In theory, hotels in Las Vegas, if they take it, obviously the slot machines don't, so they want you staying in their hotel, so you drop your real money in their slot machines. So Las Vegas or any gambling resorts are pretty famous for barter being part of the package somewhere down the line.
So a business, before they consider joining, they've got to figure out what is a customer worth over the lifetime with that business.
Right.
If they're a repeat customer and they know they've got a customer that buys $1,000 from them every year consistently, in 10 years they're worth $10,000. So if they can get them in as a trade customer and take a loss, you know, they can actually lose a few thousand dollars. As long as they know and they have the ability to keep that customer over 10 years, they're going to come ahead in the cash world.
Yeah, it's also a great networking currency in itself, because if I take one of my business associates with me to dinner and I use a trade dollar and it's $50, that business associate probably would have never been there ever without me using my trade dollars. Now it exposes him to a new restaurant, and he'll come back and use his cash dollars because he's not part of iTex. So it's a great way to network your business and backdoor your business for cash dollars, because a lot of people don't belong to the iTex barter system. It's just like the chimney sweep guy. He belongs to the barter system, and he cleans my chimney, and I pay him $100 to clean it. Well, he asked me to tell everybody on the street about him, and I'm more than happy to tell everybody on the street, because I just got my chimney clean with trade dollars, and now I'm telling everybody on the street this guy's a good guy, and they're going to pay him cash dollars. So it's a good networking currency.
So it can bring in referral business.
Yes, it brings a lot of referrals. It's a 10-to-1 ratio, in my opinion. Every trade dollar that you take in is equal to 10 cash dollars, because basically when people start using these trade dollars, they're saving each other cash, and they're also referring new cash customers to the system. So I buy an ice cream cone, and I take my friend to the ice cream parlor, and he takes his family back there, and they pay cash, and he tells other people about it, and they pay cash. So it could be a domino effect on one ice cream cone for cash. So a lot of people are introduced to businesses with a trade dollar that might not be able to be introduced before.
Okay, now look, when you go into businesses and people are considering signing up with a professional trading organization, you're analyzing as you're talking to that business, and you're trying to determine, okay, does this guy have the capacity to do trade? So you want people to come into the organization who do have the capacity to do trade. So when you're looking at a business, if you're talking to the business owner, what would you tell him, and how do you sum up if this guy really has something to trade that's going to bring in trade volume for your exchange? How do businesses analyze what they have to trade?
If you look at every business has certain slow periods. For instance, a hotel has slow periods in an off-season, like in the wintertime. If you're in Southern California, in the wintertime, things slow up after Labor Day. They pick up at spring break. So I would say their slow time is October through February. That's definitely a slow period. So if you have to look at those slow periods as being a time of not so much business, then that's a great way to talk to hotels about taking another form of currency. Now, on the flip side of that, from March to September, their capacity is 95%. So they probably wouldn't take a trade dollar as much as they would a cash dollar, and sometimes they won't join for that simple reason, because they don't want to look at trade dollars. They want the real green stuff. So talking to certain entities at certain times of the year are more appropriate for a barter system, because people understand it, because they're obviously slow and they want the business. When they're obviously running almost full capacity, unless they're looking to bring in an extra 5% when they're at 95%, it's marginal. So you have to find something that they want in their peak season, and then they'll sign up. So usually everybody in the hotel industry is looking for advertising. Advertising is probably their number one expense. They're always looking for that extra edge to get more clients in the door. So advertising is something that is probably the number one commodity in barter. If you don't have advertising in barter, you're really not a barter exchange. So advertising is probably the number one commodity, in my opinion. So members at all times are looking for some way to get people in their door. Word-of-mouth advertising is probably the best, but word-of-mouth doesn't really hit a lot of venues fast enough. So if they want to get the national client, they're going to have to use the radio or the TV or the national publications. And those publications are expensive. And if they can use all or part of it on trade, they're going to do it.
How much advertising is available on trade through iTex? Is there a good selection for people who want to advertise?
I would say it's a great selection. However, it has to be a selection that's going to work for you. A radio station in St. Louis is not going to work for the client in San Diego. However, it might work for the client in San Diego if he was trying to market a certain product in St. Louis. For instance, Branson, Missouri is a notorious resort in Missouri. And so maybe the client that's trying to hit the San Diego market, if that radio station reaches far enough to San Diego, then they'll use their trade dollars. But if it only reaches into the greater Branson area, it's really not worth it. So you have to find advertising venues that are national for people to use all the time. Now, some of them, you don't need it. I mean, if you're only looking for, like, a direct mail piece, and you have a direct mail company that hits a certain zip code, and that zip code hits like 10,000 homes, and it's a window washer, then it doesn't make sense for him to advertise with a radio station in St. Louis. It only makes sense for him to advertise where he wants the service. It also depends on where the advertising is and how far the circulation is and what the capacity of the market is for that particular venue.
Earlier you were giving the example of what it costs for a restaurant to trade. How does someone listening to this who has all kinds of different businesses determine what their barter cost is?
Well, it's kind of on a relative nature. Say, for instance, a restaurant sells a hamburger for $5. The cost of that hamburger for the restaurant is not only the cost of food, but it's the cost of labor, it's the cost of advertising, it's the cost of help. There's all kinds of things that are involved in that cost. That's the reason why it costs $5. Now, if you excluded half of those things, like advertising or labor, then it might not cost so much. So there is definitely a cost basis to that $5 hamburger. However, if you look at it from the standpoint that it's bringing you new business you'd never get, then in theory it's the cost of the food as opposed to what it costs anyway, because everybody has to pay those costs anyway. You have to pay labor no matter if I'm in there or not, and you have to pay food whether I'm in that restaurant or not. So it's not really something extra that's coming out of your pocket. We're just adding new business to your system. So if you look at it from that standpoint, then it is a big advantage for restaurants to take in a trade dollar, because now there's new business walking in the door. Plus, they have perishable inventories. Some restaurants throw out 10, 15, 20% of their food a year because it's not always being used. Now, naturally, some of it is canned, some of it has preservatives, but some of it is salad, and some of it is things that are perishable that don't last very long. So if they're throwing away that food and they know that they're going to throw it away and a barter took up some of that capacity that they were normally throwing away, then that's an extra profit for them.
Okay, now let's say that I'm considering signing up with a barter organization. Let's say I know I have the capacity to earn trade dollars. How do I know what I want? What can I get on trade, and how do I know if I could use those items? What's a simple technique that I could do?
When I approach somebody that I need, for instance, I need an electrician. Now, electricians are very high in demand in trade because all the business owners, something's breaking in their restaurant or something's breaking at their house or whatever. So they're always looking for electricians. So I'll approach the electrician and ask him if he would be considering joining an exchange. And he'll say to me, well, what can I trade for? And I'll ask him, well, what do you normally use cash for? And I have a list of about 50 different things that people use all the time. They always get their car fixed. They always go to the dentist. They always go to the dry cleaner. They go to the lawyer. But on a normal basis, you're looking for things that they use every day or possibly at least once a week. So you're looking for things that they normally use or everyday cash dollars on. And when you find those things and you identify what those things are, then you're ahead of the ball game because now it's a service for them because they're actually buying at the cost of their labor. Now, some of these guys will say, well, I don't buy anything. I never go shopping and I never go to the dry cleaner. I have my own dentist. I have my own restaurant. I don't want to go all the way across town to get a taco. And so those people are a little bit more difficult to get the concept, but you still keep fishing. They're not thinking about things off the top of their head. I mean, sure, right now, if I asked you 10 things what you normally spend your money on, you couldn't probably name more than 10. So you go through your checkbook and you look for all the things you normally spend cash on. Well, I can save you money there. I can save you money there. Now, obviously, people who have an open mind to accepting a new form of currency are a little bit better candidates. And sometimes it takes them a while. I tell you, when I first joined organized barter years ago, this guy approached me about it and says, oh, no, no, I don't want anything to do with that. First of all, I told him, that's illegal. And he said, no, it's not illegal. I said, yes, it is. It's illegal, and I don't want to have anything to do with it. Come to find out, it's not illegal at all. It's governed by the United States government. It's legal currency. It's on your tax forms. It's the Tefra Act of 1982 made all barter exchanges legal currency. So now it's not only legal, but is recognized by the U.S. government as a legal tender. And when it's recognized as a legal tender, now it's a strong currency in itself. Now, there's people that do direct trading underneath the table, and when they do underneath the table like that, that's a little fishy. You got to be careful there. So all the organized barter exchanges have to report to the IRS. We have to send out a 1099. So everybody who does organized barter is in the legal arena. If you're in the legal arena and you take 200 seats out of your movie theater and advertise, then you're buying it at the cost of the percentages it costs to join an exchange.
So that kind of brings me to this question. How does one choose a trade exchange to work with? What should I be looking for? How many trade exchanges are out there, and what criteria should I look for before choosing one to do business with?
Well, the one thing you should always look for is to see the credibility, the visibility of the barter exchange. A great avenue to look for is barternews.com.
For more interviews like this, please go to hardtofindseminars.com.
Well, the one thing you should always look for is to see the credibility, the visibility of the barter exchange. A great avenue to look for is barternews.com. Bob Meyer owns barternews.com, and the barter system has several hundred barter organizations in the world today, and they're recognized by the National Association of Trade Exchanges, which is called NATE, NATE.org, or IRTA, International Reciprocal Trade Association, which is .org, and they're two entities that recognize all the major trade exchanges. And if you look under those categories, you'll find major trade exchanges. The major trade exchanges are doing in the millions in volume and happen to be prejudiced, but the big boys are ITEX, which is the largest one in North America, BarterCard, which is pretty big outside of North America, and there's another one called WIR in Switzerland, W-I-R, which actually the very first barter exchanges in the world was WIR, W-I-R, in Switzerland.
How big are they?
I'm not really sure, but I know they were probably one of the first, if not the first, barter exchange, and they're still in existence. They're in Europe. But I'm not sure how they technically operate. I know it is in existence. BarterCard was actually started in Australia from the BXI network, which they purchased from, I believe, and they are gangbusters in Australia. In North America, they tried. They weren't as successful, but they still tried. I think the largest barter exchange, in my opinion, right now are ITEC and Continental and a couple others, but I don't really follow them that closely. Since ITEC is the biggest one, I really follow what the ITEC system is.
What are the typical commissions charged by trade exchanges and barter brokers?
Okay, well, let's start with the joining fee. I've heard some exchanges are charging $1,995 to join their exchange. Then their commissions could be up to 20% of the actual barter trade. So if I was to buy a $100 gift certificate from one of the restaurants, I would have to pay $20 in cash for the commission that I would have to pay the barter exchange. Normally, they're probably hovering between 5 and 15%. In ITEX, it is 5% on each transaction. Theory is 10%, but the buyer and the seller are paying for half the transaction. The normal everyday association fees in ITEX are $20 in cash and $10 in trade. That gives you $10,000 a year co-op advertising expense. That means if you do advertising with one of the members, we'll give you back $10,000 a year, half of what it costs you, and 5% on each transaction. So if you do a deal and it's $6 for a sandwich, we charge the restaurant 30 cents and we charge you 30 cents. That's the way it works. The $2,500 credit line issued in the ITEX system, that means we loan everybody a $2,500 credit line. It's a misnomer. People think it's free money, but in theory, it's just a loan that we're giving you to get started. So in case you have a transmission that needs to be fixed and you have $800 in your account, in theory, you really have $3,300. You have $800 in the black and $2,500 in the red, so you can use your credit line, but you still have to pay that back with your trade dollar.
Am I charged interest on that?
You're charged 1.5%, but usually it's a good idea to use your credit line only as an overdraft, in my opinion. Don't get too far in the hole with your credit line because the IRS and the exchanges consider this cash. And if you don't pay it back, you owe the exchange cash. So it's not too advisable to get into your credit line unless you know you're going to pay it back in trade dollars. Don't think it's just free money to go out and spend on ice cream cones or hot air balloon rides, and then all of a sudden you're $1,500 in your hole. You still have to pay that back with trade dollars. So it's not a good idea to use your credit line unless you know your trade flow is coming in at a steady pace. And that's what barter exchanges are looking for. They're looking for the traders. They're looking for the guys that know how to spend it incoming and spend it outgoing. And once you start doing it, it becomes another currency that you'll use all the time. And you'll use it first before you use your cash dollars. And if you can do that, then you're saving your checkbook, and your other cash checkbook. So in theory, you can't pay your mortgage with it, but in theory, you can pay your mortgage with it because every trade dollar you take saves more cash dollars than you can spend on your mortgage. So you didn't have to spend $1,500 on your transmission that would come out of that mortgage budget. Now you have $1,500 to spend on that transmission job and use your trade checkbook. So it is a great advantage if you know how to use your trade dollar and you get used to it. It does take a little while to get used to it. It's not something you pick up overnight. I know in our exchange we have 5 brokers in the office and they make sure they hold your hand. We have an orientation period for 6 months. It's just not to sign you up and walk away. We don't sell memberships. We sell partnerships. We're partners together in this, and we make sure that our members try to stay happy. Now, obviously, we can't make everybody happy, but we try, and we have a wish list, and we tell them to send 10 things every 30 days that they're looking for, and I kind of believe that we're hitting about 3 out of 10. Can't get everything. Can't get Starbucks, but we might get Starbucks coffee, but we can't get Starbucks as the company. Or we might get IHOP, but we can't get Domino's. Sometimes you can get these things, sometimes you can't. Some areas of the country work with chains a lot. Some of them don't. It just depends on what's available in the system, and basically it's how aggressive the exchange is. If the exchange is real aggressive, then there's a lot of things in that market. The New York Exchange, the biggest trade exchange in North America, is doing, I think, probably twice as much as any other exchange in North America. But they're also in the largest commerce area in the world, so naturally you'd expect them to be there. The second largest is, I believe, Orlando, and the third largest is San Diego. And I think we're pretty proud of that fact that San Diego is the third largest barter exchange in North America.
So when I sign up, how am I going to find all the different things that are available on trade? If I know I have the capacity to earn the trade dollars, how's a barter exchange going to show me?
It used to be in print. From 1960 to 1995, all the barter exchanges had everything in print. And then the Internet came along. And now all the exchanges have moved totally online. There's very few exchanges that actually print a directory anymore, although there is some printed material. It's mostly online. So the way iTax works is you have a password, which is a password that you and your broker know. Then you have an account number, which you and your broker know. And you have a checkbook, and you just write checks against your balance. So in theory, if I went to the restaurant and sat down and had a sandwich, I'd write them a check for $6. Now, I still have to pay the tax and tip in cash. So that's another entity that has to be considered when you're going to use a trade dollar. Sometimes it's not always trade. Sometimes there is a cash component. And the taxes and tips are usually a cash component. Some members will take the whole thing, but normally 95% of the members, there's a cash component someplace. Now, there's also a cash component if you have to ship it. So if I buy a piece of furniture in New York, I'm going to have to pay the shipping. So there could be tax and shipping as well. Tips are paid in cash to the restaurants normally. The hairdressers normally get them in cash and a few other industries, and they're usually between 10 and 20%. In iTax, we try to tell our members to pay 18% because that's the norm these days. It used to be 15, now it's tendency to be 18. So those are some of the things that you have to watch out for when you use a trade dollar. You have to be aware of the rules. The rules have to be understood before you go out and use. Even though you sign up to a trade club, that's why we have orientations, so you can understand the rules, because the rules have to be followed. Everybody has to play by the rules. There can't be any 50-50 trade deals, because that destroys the system. So people have a tendency to think they can make up their own rules. Well, if they make up their own rules, then it hurts the whole system. So we have what is called barter police, and we make sure that the members are playing by the rules, or we'll call them up and say, you know, what's going on here? You have to play by the rules. Everybody has to play on the same level playing ground as everybody else. And if everybody does that, it's great. And it works most of the time, but I'm not going to say it's the perfect world.
Is it possible to get contracting work done on trade? If so, what would be some suggestions to follow for that success?
Well, there is possible to get contracting job. In ITEX, we have a $5,000 limit per transaction. So if it's somebody that's coming over to pour concrete for a hotel and the transaction is $28,000, well, anything past $5,000 is between the buyer and the seller, so far as the negotiations of transaction. So it could be $23,000 cash and $5,000 trade. Well, the guy who wants the trade, he's probably going to ask to see if he can do it for $8,000 or $9,000 or $10,000 or maybe the whole thing. So anything past $5,000 in trade is negotiable between the buyer and the seller.
If the guy wants $20,000 in trade, will ITEX let him do it?
Yeah, ITEX will encourage you to take the whole thing in trade. However, in some instances, it's not feasible and it's not practical. If you hire a contractor to put on two new rooms in your house and he says it's $30,000, well, he still has to pay his help. He's got to pay all these other entities, and so it's pretty negotiable. After $5,000, you're not going to get anybody to do those two rooms anyway for $5,000. So imagine it's going to be somewhere between a 60-40 split or something like that. But that's fair as long as it's past $5,000. Now, where it gets a little bit shady is where the guy takes $2,000 in trade and the rest in cash. Well, that's not fair because that's not the rules. So we have to watch people and we have to know what's going on in the marketplace. And we want the brokers to call us to see if this makes sense. Or if it doesn't make sense, we want to get the parties together and make sure they're on the same page.
All right, let me ask you this. Let's say I'm a member of the trade exchange. I want to buy something. Let's say it's an auto mechanic, and he says, okay, to fix your transmission, it's going to be 1,000 trade and 1,000 cash. What would you tell me as a new trade member to do if I encounter a situation like that?
Well, then I would say call us up and say that's not allowed. Because if that's the case, then he's not playing by the rules. The rules are that you have to take the first $5,000 all trade. Now, there could be a cash component in there below $5,000. For instance, you go to the auto mechanic and he only fixes brakes, does belts, and, you know, some of the light stuff like that, things that are normally between $200 and $500. And he says, well, no, you need a new transmission, and I have to order it from Chrysler. And Chrysler says it's $1,900 in cash, and it's only going to cost you $200 in trade to put it in. I don't think that's pretty fair that it's out of the norm I pay for the $1,900 in cash to Chrysler, because it wouldn't be fair for the auto mechanic to take $1,900 out of his pocket. So that would be the situation. Now, that's not normally the situation. You're going to try to find somebody in the barter system that does transmissions 100% trade all the way, because that's what he does, because he buys transmissions in bulk. It's like going to a restaurant, a pancake house, and say, well, you know, I don't like anything on here. I want lobster. Well, I don't have lobster. I'm a pancake house. Well, then I'll go out and buy the lobster, but you got to pay for it in cash because I don't normally stock lobsters. So everybody has to play fair here. That's one big thing about the barter system. You have to play fair. And everybody knows what everything else costs. And if you get a fair barter deal and everybody's happy, it's fair. It's 100% trade, but it has to be fair and it has to be between the buyer and the seller. Now, back to your original question, it's $1,000 in trade and $1,000 in cash. Well, if the guy is happy paying $1,000 in trade and $1,000 in cash and he doesn't normally do that kind of work, then that could be considered a fair trade, but he doesn't normally do that. But it can't be a break job where it's half trade and half cash. I mean, it's just not fair. Everybody else has to play on the same game.
Okay. Give me an idea. How do the trade exchanges make money?
Most of it, we make money on transaction fees. 10% is the normal everyday charge for most trade exchanges. Some are at 12%, some are at 15%. But on the general norm, it's 10%. BXI years ago used to do it 10% on the buy. That means when I went and spent the trade dollar and I spent $15 at the dry cleaner, BXI would charge me $1.50 in cash, which they would send me a bill and I'd have to pay $1.50 in cash. Now, most of the trade exchanges have split the transaction fees between the buyer and the seller. And the reason why they did that is because the cash flow issues. Some of the members would hoard all their trade dollars and they weren't making any money. So now they had to split the fees down the middle. Now, in the same transaction, it's 75 cents goes to the trade exchange from the buyer and 75 cents goes to the trade exchange from the seller. So the buyer and the seller are paying for half the trade now, and that's the way most barter exchanges work these days. Now, there could be incentives for you to reduce your trade fees, and some exchanges have incentives. ITEX has an incentive. You can trade at 15% and get a mailed statement, or you can trade at 10% and go on auto pay. That means they charge your checking account or your electronic transfer from your credit card. They charge those entities every time you do a transaction, and that's the way most barter exchanges are going these days, with what they call auto pay. So that's a cashless currency. And the ITEX network, their moniker, it is a cashless transaction. We are the largest cashless marketplace in the United States with 22,000 members.
Okay, great. Let's talk a little bit about taxes. And I know you're not an accountant, and I'll give you a disclaimer. This is not meant to be legal accounting advice, and anyone listening needs to contact their own accountant for definite answers. But explain a little bit about the tax consequences and what someone should consider and need to know before they get involved.
Barter exchanges are considered legal currency. The United States recognizes all barter exchanges as legal currency. When you do a transaction, you have to realize that the United States government is going to recognize this as an income. Now, the benefit is when you turn around and spend it, it's usually in the tax write-off arena. When you spend a cash dollar in advertising, it's a tax write-off. When you spend a cash dollar for office supplies, it's a tax write-off. The same thing applies in the barter arena. It's a tax write-off. There are certain marginal things that you're going to have to call your tax accountant about, but it's the same thing. It's considered just like a regular earned cash dollar.
So if I get signed up with an exchange in January and I earn $100,000 in trade dollars in come December 31st, if I'm sitting on that $100,000 and I haven't spent it and expensed it out, I'm going to be liable for taxes on $100,000 worth of income, even though it's barter.
Exactly. So you want to usually spend it out to zero or close to zero by December 31st. So when it shows up on the statement, you can itemize what is deductible and what is not. That's determined between you and your accountant. But it's usually, you know, the normal everyday stuff that you would be able to itemize in the cash world. The same thing applies in the trade world. It's all relative.
Can you talk a little bit about what Scrip is, about marketing with Scrip, and how one can use that as a tool to generate business?
Scrip is a form of controlled currency that some of the entities in the barter networks have to use. For instance, restaurants use it a lot. For instance, if I buy $100 worth of Domino's gift certificates, the reason why Domino's does it that way, for the most part, is because the drivers don't have time to fool around with the checks and get an authorization on the transaction at the door. The Scrip in itself is a gift certificate good for incremental amount of $10, $20, $30, it could be as much as $100. And the reason why a lot of the entities in barter use Scrip is because it's also a great way to advertise. If I buy $100 worth of Domino's Scrip, I might use 20 of it, then I give it away as a door prize or give it away as a present. It becomes actually a currency with blinders on it. It only goes back into one spot, so it's actually an advertising currency in itself, and it's a great way to advertise because business owners will buy it and just give it away as promotion, or they'll give it away as presents. So it works as two sides to the marketing arena. It works as promotion and it works as advertising.
Can you explain the concept of breakage? So if I'm a restaurant owner and I'm offering Scrip out there to the barter community, explain what breakage is and how I come out of it.
Breakage is people will buy $100 worth of gift certificates, but the breakage could be anywhere from 15 to 30%. When we say the word breakage, that means 15 to 30% of it is never used. People get it, they put it in their drawer, they forget about it, they lose it, and it's gone. It's never used. So that's a big boon for the merchants because they already have it in their account and they've already spent it. Also, the gift certificate is not always used immediately. So sometimes it'll be used 3, 4, 5, 6 months later. And in the state of California, it is against the law to put expiration date on a gift certificate. So it is considered legal currency. Now, on the gift certificate, and when you're using it with barter, it will usually say no change given. And it'll also say on there taxes and tips must be paid in cash. There are stipulations on the gift certificate, but it is considered U.S. currency, and it is considered a viable way to do business.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. So let's say I'm listening to this and I have a business that I think would fit within your organization. What's it going to cost me to get signed up with you?
The sign-up fee in iTex is $595. That gives you $10,000 in co-op advertising and a $2,500 credit line. The association fee is billed every 28 days is $20 in cash and $10 in trade. And 5% is billed on each transaction in cash.
Okay, great. And I get my own checks and my checkbook and all that.
You get unlimited check writing, and we print the checks absolutely free for you, as many as you want. And we have mixers once a month for all the members to get together, and we have trade fairs twice a year. And we also have trade fairs all over the United States. The iTex dollar is good anywhere in North America, including Canada. So it is a pretty vast network. There are larger pockets, naturally, in the bigger commerce areas, but there are some small little areas of iTex that you can spend it on, like dude ranches and resorts. You can get all your transactions done online as long as both parties agree that the account number is the form of currency that you're using. So, for instance, if I wanted to buy a fur jacket in Chicago, I could say, well, okay, we'll just debit my account, and I'll give you my account number. It's usually better, though, to follow it up with a hard trade check, but you can do it both ways.
Can you fax the check?
You can fax the check, definitely.
So online, can you search every single member of the entire network?
Yes, and that's an advantage and a disadvantage, because once you start searching, believe me, you can get lost. You could be on there 10 days and not see 1%. It's just like endless, because there's so much inventory coming into the system on a daily basis that originally you were looking for the skateboard, and all of a sudden you wanted to buy the furniture and the tires. So it's a good thing and a bad thing at the same time. Kind of forget sometimes what you're looking for, and all of a sudden you need $30,000 where you only needed $300.
All right, can you give me some examples over the years of businesses you've signed up, of some good case studies or some success stories that you can share with the listeners so they can identify what being involved in trade can do for them?
Well, one of my very best members is a movie theater, and he uses his empty seats to purchase his maid service. Now, that's something that he would normally have to pay cash for, but now he uses his dead seats that he's not using on every movie, and he turns around and uses his trade dollars on his maid service, which is a big savings for him right then and there.
Is this in San Diego?
This is in Carlsbad. It's a movie theater called Movie Max. There's also a member, he's an attorney. He does attorney services. He uses it all the time eating out. That's a big savings for him. There are members that use it just for like one or two things, and one of the two things is advertising. It's probably the biggest expense you could possibly do. One of our members is a furniture store, and he advertises like crazy, and when he uses his advertising dollars, if he puts the iTex logo in the corner, we give him back $10,000 a year in advertising costs. So that's a big benefit for him right there. He can use his advertising dollars with iTex, and we'll give half of it back up to 10 grand a year.
As long as he uses the little logo, his advertising is cut in half.
Exactly. And there's also other entities you can use it with. You can use it with the radio stations, and you can use it with TV. You have to follow the guidelines within the iTex system, but they give you back $10,000 a year. It's a benefit to you. That's why you pay the $30 a month, because it goes into that pool. And so it helps out tremendously on your advertising costs.
Any other case studies you can think of?
Well, there's guys where you use it for employee perks. I know it's hard to keep your employees happy, so a lot of the entities will give it to them for medical costs. If they didn't have dental care, now they do. If they didn't have optometric care, now they do. So they pass it on to their employees. Sometimes they make the employees pay the 10% as the co-payment, and for an employee to go get $1,000 worth of dental work for $100, that's a big benefit, because most insurances are co-pay anyway. So that's a big benefit right there, the employee perks, especially at Christmas time. When it comes time to getting Christmas trees and Christmas presents, the employers will give trade dollars out as employee perks for a job well done during the year.
Take me through the process. Let's say someone calls you and I leave a message. You call me back. Take me through a process of what exactly is going to happen. Are you going to come out to my business? Give me your system on what's going to happen, what I can expect.
Well, when somebody calls me on the phone and they're inquiring about the organized barter system, first I'll ask them, have they ever been associated with any other barter barter exchange before. That's also something I have to find out, because if they're familiar with barter, it takes half of the subject line. I don't have to talk about
the education, yeah.
Yeah, the education. I don't have to talk about a lot of it. But if they say they know about it, they always think it's just a one-on-one trade. So I explain it to them, this is how it works. It's a currency between businesses. It looks like a checking account. It looks like a regular bank statement once a month. And this is the way it works, and I'll come out and show you how it works. You know, I kind of have to keep it simple on the phone. You can't really get into a lot of definition because they can't really see what I'm talking about unless I show it to them in person. Do it on their computer because it's much easier.
Let's say you come out to my place. What are you going to show me?
Basically, when people call me up, I'm going to tell them how it works. I'm going to go out to their shop and show them at their computer. So if I show them at their computer, it's much easier for them to learn because they're going to be doing it at their computer. And we go into the system with my account number and my password, and I tell them how it works from the standpoint of how to get to the member directory, how to get to all the listings, how to search for all the products and services they're looking for, and where all the meetings are, or if there's a background they want to know on how iTech started, there's information on the company.
All right, Art, we've covered a lot of information here, and I think it's been valuable. I've really enjoyed picking your brain about barter. So anyone interested in learning more, I'd advise them to give you a call, and so you can take them through the process and show them more. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Michael. Really appreciate your time.
Okay, Art. It's Michael with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com in another bonus tip. How would you like to turn your $28 book or ebook or even a concept in your head into a $3,900 information product? I'll provide you the secrets on how to do this. If you'd like a completely free 30-day trial of my system for turning your simple book or even just a concept in your mind into an information product that you can sell for $97, $197, or even as much as $3,900 or more. This system includes a whole range of tricks and tips to help you pack your audio program full of great stories that take control of your listeners' brains. My information product creation system comes with my personal guarantee that you'll create an information product worth from $97 to $497 that's designed to sell like hotcakes. This is a 30-day free trial. If you'd like information on this, please email me at michael@hardtofindseminars.com. In the subject line, write in all caps, $28 book, and I'll email you information on how to turn your $28 book or even a concept in your mind into a $3,900 information product. Hi, this is Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff, hardtofindseminars.com. Here is another bonus tip in a valuable service that I offer to select clients. If you can talk into an ordinary telephone, you can be selling your own high-priced audio programs in as little as 7 days. This is the easiest way on earth to create a series of powerful audio recordings for your own information product. I call you on an ordinary telephone and interview you live on a series of related hot topics about your niche subject. I take care of all the editing, all the technical stuff, and I give you the finished MP3s or WAV files and audio transcripts. I only have time to give this deluxe personalized service to a few more carefully selected clients. If you're interested in developing and creating your own valuable information products that you could have complete in as short as 7 days and be selling for as high as $300, $500, even $3,900, please contact me at Michael@hardtofindseminars.com. In the subject line of your email, please write info product information in all capital. Make sure I have your name and a way to contact you by phone, and we can talk about your specific ideas. Or you may call me at 858-274-7851. Hi, it's Michael Senoff here with another bonus tip from Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. It's called an audio infomercial. Your audio infomercial, which I create for you, will sell more products of yours faster, easier, and for less cost than any conventional advertising method, and I guarantee it 100%. Imagine catching yourself at concert pitch talking about what makes your business or your product service unique, what makes it special. imagine taking a professional recording of that perfect sales presentation that I create for you and giving it to your prospect as an audio CD or an internet download from your website. I can do this for you faster than you ever thought possible with my personalized audio informational recording service. If you're interested in this unique service, please contact me at michael@hardtofindseminars.com. In the subject line of your email, in all capitals, write audio infomercial, and I will get back with you with more information. Hi, it's Michael Sinoff here with another tip from Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. This tip is one that is dear to my heart, and the reason why is because I know what a difference it can make for your business. It has to do with editing your audio recordings. If you are using audio online or offline to sell, market, and educate your prospects, this tip will be the most important tip you ever hear from me. Editing your audio content before you publish it to your site simply gets better results compared to unedited audio content. Think about this. A new song on the radio may be in the editing studio for months before it's released to the public. A new movie may take years in the editing process before it's released to the big screen or on DVD. Well-written sales letters, online promotions, books, and commercials are all meticulously edited to perfection before they are released. You would never dream of releasing an unedited version of any of these sales vehicles. So why would you publish unedited audio? Unedited audio content is abandoned by the listener faster, it produces less sales for you, and it actually destroys your credibility as a publisher. So why are we seeing so much unedited content proliferating the internet? The reason is simple. There are very few people who offer audio editing services who know what they are doing. Editing audio is kind of like plastic surgery. It's part skill and part an art form. You need someone with both the skill to do it and someone who understands marketing and selling. A poor result can be gained by both a skilled surgeon as well as a good technical editor. Who you choose to do your audio editing can be one of the best investments in your business. At HardToFindSeminars.com, we have been editing online and offline web content for 6 years. We have perfected a proprietary editing system that has been proven to get your customers to listen to your audio content longer and to listen to it more often, resulting in more sales for you more often, and with clean edited audio, you can demand more money for your products and services. It's just like in life, you only have one chance to make a first impression. Every time you release and publish unedited audio content, you are projecting a poor, sloppy, I don't care attitude that turns your prospects off. Do your prospects a favor. Service them. Give them your best. Do them a favor by giving them professionally edited audio messages, interviews, teleseminars, and selling promotions by editing your audio. We provide full audio editing services that are fast and at a reasonable rate. We know that editing your audio content can easily pay for itself 20 times over. Call me, Michael Sinoff, for more information at 858-274-7851. I'll spend some time on the phone with you. We'll determine what audio content you're publishing. I'll be glad to offer you a free consultation on my ideas. I'll review some of your audio, and together we'll come up with a solution that gets you better results. Thanks for listening. This is Michael Sinoff with HardToFindSeminars.com. That's the end of my interview with Art. If you're interested in getting involved in trade, please contact Art at the number provided at the end of the interview. Thanks for listening.